Welcome to the Sharp 600, brought to you by Covers.com. I'm Rob Cressy, and I'm super excited to be jamming with you. And joining me to get you ready for Sweet 16 and Elite 8 action, first from Covers.com, we have Jason Logan. You can follow him on Twitter at CoversJLo. Jason, great to have you back on the show.
Thank you, Rob. Excited to be back talking some Sweet 16.
And also joining from Covers, we have Rohit Panea. You can follow him on Twitter at Covers_Ro. Rohit, great to have you back on.
Always good to be on, Rob.
So like we did last time, I think it's important that we start about mindset for betting, because betting the Sweet 16 is different than betting the opening round because, one, we have fewer games. Two, we're more familiar with these teams and many of them being higher seeds. So, Jason, I'm going to start with you. Does your betting mindset change at all when it comes to betting the Sweet 16?
Well, I think you need to be a little more selective about what you saw in the first two games for those teams. And is that something that is common with teams, or is this something that's an anomaly? Take a team like Texas Tech. We knew they were a very good defense, and they showed that. But in that first game against Montana State, they shot the lights out. That's not them. They're not an offensive team. Against Notre Dame, it was more of kind of the same thing. So putting too much weight into those short little things and finding out what is an anomaly and what's something that can carry over is a big thing. And then also, too, like those little intangibles, teams that have been there before, coaches that know how to prep their team, teams that are used to traveling a lot, because you're having teams like Duke now going from playing 2 hours away from campus to having to cross the country and play in San Francisco. How does that impact the team? How does that impact a young team or a veteran team? All these little things kind of fold in. You have to be careful not to just get overboard on the things that you saw over the last 4 days.
But Jason, wouldn't some of that stuff already be baked into the line? Like, a lot of times the sports bettors are like, oh, here's a team going from east to west or west to east, and oh, they're not going to be as good for this. Doesn't some of this get accounted into the line? Is this just like one of the things you think about, not the thing?
Yeah, it's one of the many things you want to fold into your handicapping. And by no means am I going to bet blindly on a team that's having to travel across the country, especially a savvy team like Duke that has obviously the greatest college coach in college basketball going to be able to prep. But it's a young team too, so you don't know how they're going to be able to take that. A lot of this stuff is factored kind of into the line, but that's where you can kind of find those intangible edges too.
Rohit, what about you?
Yeah, you know, it's a lot of the same things. You never want to put too much value on one game or even two games and overreact a little bit to these line movements. But at the same time, there's definitely things you can take away. I think the big thing and my biggest takeaway this year in general was, I think when heading into the tournament, there was definitely an emphasis on the importance of 3-point shooting and how that can, that can win a game for anyone, especially an underdog team. But you look at all these popular teams that everyone was betting on to pull off the upset, South Dakota State, Virginia Tech, Colgate, Davidson, all these sharp 3-point shooting teams. Well, they can go cold, and pretty much all of them went cold from deep. There's such just a big variable when it comes to something like 3-point shooting. And then you have other teams that, they had one or two guys catch fire, Iowa State, Texas, and all of a sudden they were draining 3-pointers and pulling off the win. And so I think when you look at something like 3-point shooting, especially, there's just so many variables in that. It's just so inconsistent. That's not the sort of thing you can really count on to be consistently showing up from game to game. So I think once you get down to the nitty gritty, the Sweet 16, you're going to be heavily leaning on those teams with defenses, like Jason mentioned, with veteran leadership, with good coaching. And those are going to be the ones that kind of pull you out through this stage of the game.
Yeah, and I think, speaking of defense, the thing that I've probably been most impressed by is Houston's defense. You see these teams that just clamp down the other team and they literally can't do anything, and it's been great for unders in a variety of different ways. There's been the good defenses, but then there's also been the terrible shooting where you're looking at some of these games and they're sitting there, and I was tweeting some of these. I believe LSU had 17 or 19 points in the half, and there's another team that had 19 points in the half, and you're like, holy smokes, like, they're barely scoring a combined 50 points in the first half. Jason, is there anything that stood out to you from the first two rounds?
No, not really from a betting standpoint. I mean, you saw a couple shockers, but there's no, like, real big trend that jumped out at me. In those tight games, I've been betting a lot of like under first half totals and under team totals and stuff like that. It's really tough. I mean, this time of the year, and it's funny because Rohit and I were talking about this a couple days ago, like in terms of betting value, like getting the best bang for your buck and finding edges, a regular Saturday in college basketball is better than the NCAA tournament because, one, you have so many more games, but there's the lines aren't as drum tight. And it is so tight to beat that opening and closing numbers here because they only move a point and a half to two. I mean, we were looking at line movement for the tournament, and there's barely a blip on some of these things. Some of the totals get to move a little quicker. But I mean, you're only seeing like a point and a half to a 2-point move being the biggest movement on the board. So I try to find value in those other markets that might be a little kind of a little more soft or a little more forgiving, where you can find that edge in kind of a 20-minute span rather than a 40-minute where things tend to play themselves out.
So let's do a quick betting recap from Jason Logan. So favorites this year in the March Madness heading into the Sweet 16, 36 and 15 straight up. Favorites were, however, 24 and 27 against the spread. Favorites of 3 points or less, 8 and 5 straight up and against the spread, which looked like the best number of an ATS standpoint. And double-digit favorites, 13 and 1 straight up, but just 7 and 7 against the spread. Looking on the total side of things, 28 and 24 for the over-under. So nothing really standing out from like we had seen during the NFL season where there are these polar opposites one way or another of runs of favorites and runs of underdogs. So Rohit, let's get into the games and let's start in the Midwest. And we got two games, Kansas laying 7.5 taking on Providence, Miami laying 2.5 versus Iowa State. Where you want to start?
Doesn't really matter. Let's kick things off with that Providence Kansas game, though. That's definitely been one that it seems after two rounds, people are kind of coming around on Providence a little bit. I mean, this was one of the one of the worst upset calls in the first round. Was everyone was kind of on South Dakota State to pull off that upset against Providence. We saw such a short line with a 4 seed going up against a 13 seed. But Providence proved they were the better team there, won again the other day. And now they're facing off against a Kansas team that, you know, on the surface is very, very loaded, but there's always question marks. And they had to kind of sneak their way past Creighton, which was dealing with some big key injuries. So I think there's definitely going to be value on Providence in this one. Kansas, that line opened at Kansas at -8. You're seeing that now at -7.5. Definitely people riding the Friars in this one. And they have been a good team kind of all season long. So you are seeing people kind of come over to that side now and realize that this is a quality team. Maybe the Big East is a conference that gets overlooked a little bit right now, but perhaps shouldn't be. As far as Kansas goes, I think one thing that has made me a little bit lean off from them is we talked about it last week, and we were talking about, you know, the emphasis on these big superstar players and having a guy in your team that can take over a game. And Agbaji hasn't really played well this tournament. He's been okay, but he's had his moments at times. But, you know, he's shooting about 35% from the field. And he's not really, you know, making his mark on the game. And if that doesn't happen, then I think Providence can certainly stick around in this one. I think they've got defensive chops for it. And they've been shooting pretty well as well.
And one thing of note about Kansas, Bill Self, just 6-10 against the spread in the Sweet 16 or Elite 8 while at Kansas. So there's an element of how much do I trust Kansas? They're always loaded with talent, always a top seed, but they should have a few more national championships than I think we've seen. Jason, looking at you over at the West, we've got two good things. We got Gonzaga, the number one overall seed, laying 9, taking on Arkansas. We also have Texas Tech laying 1 versus Duke. And I actually want to start in that Texas Tech-Duke matchup because when looking at this, this is probably the cleanest bracket for a lot of people because we got 1, 2, 3, 4. And I liked Texas Tech to advance in this game heading into the tournament. And now with a line at 1, we got Coach K, who's 5-11 against the spread in his last 16 Sweet 16 games. And only the second time all year that Duke has been an underdog. The other time was against Gonzaga when they did win. What are your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, and if you want to go back to that Gonzaga matchup, that was probably the toughest defense that Duke has faced up until this game. And you look at Texas Tech, this is a team that has been tested against very good offenses all throughout Big 12 play. They took on teams and took down teams like Kansas and Baylor, Texas, Oklahoma, all of which ranked top 40 in terms of offensive efficiency. And they went 7-3 straight up and ATS against those teams. We look at Duke on the other hand. They haven't seen a team like TTU here. That this is a, in the ACC, to say that the ACC was a soft conference in terms of defense is probably an understatement. They didn't have any teams ranked in the top 40 in adjusted defensive efficiency. And when Duke did stumble on to some of those tougher defensive teams in the conference, they were 1-3 straight up against the likes of North Carolina, Wake Forest, Virginia Tech, and Virginia over the past month and a half. And so we definitely see them have struggles against defensive teams, and there's no team like TTU out there. You could see the height advantage maybe for Duke. They've got big 7-footer. They got a 6'10" guy as well too. But TTU is man strong. This is a very, very experienced team. They're going to push around Duke on the blocks, not allow them to get comfortable down there. They're going to keep them off the glass. It's going to be a real, real tight one here. I think one of the biggest edges that you'll find is that Duke has a bad habit of going on extended kind of scoring slumps, and they make some unforced turnovers. And those things kind of get amplified when you play a team like TTU that pressures you, plays man-to-man all the time, will pick you up 55 full court all the way down to the floor. And TTU is going to be able to score some points off of turnovers here. You look at Texas Tech, you don't think of them as a powerful offensive team, but they're going to want to pick up the pace here against what is a bigger Duke attack, get those big lumbering forwards on their heels and get to the rim. So I like Texas Tech here. I do expect this one to kind of jump over the fence. We saw it open -1.5 TTU. It's at -1 right now. I expect the Dukies and that Coach K narrative to kind of come in here on Thursday night. And perhaps we're going to see TTU on the money line, giving back plus money. So that's what I'm waiting for there with TTU.
And I will be waiting with you. I will be on Texas Tech. And speaking of defense, let's keep it there. Looking over in the South, we got Houston taking on Arizona. Arizona, just a 1.5-point favorite. And Houston is coming into this game hot, hot, hot. 8-1-1 against the spread the last 10. And interesting about Arizona, they have not covered in either of their first two games in this tournament. Rohit, what are your thoughts on this game?
You know, first of all, the whole idea of not covering, that's one thing I'm just going to kind of put on the back burner, because at least this is a small enough spread. You're getting it off the number right now at -1.5. Really just comes down to whether or not they can win this game. And when I look at that and I look at them taking on a team like Houston, it is so tough because we've seen Arizona, you know, struggle very much against a team that's kind of like Houston light in TCU. You know, a team that rebounds very well, a team that plays like hard-nosed defense. And Houston is a team that I think a lot of people might have been sleeping on a little bit because they, you know, they don't come out of a major conference, but they've been good for such a big part of the season. A couple of stumbles against Memphis towards the end of the regular season, but then in their conference tournament, they came on strong there. And yeah, Houston's lost a couple of key rotation players to season-ending injuries, but they just keep getting it done. This is a team that is built in a lot of ways to play at the, you know, at this level. Once you get down to crunch time, the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight. The one thing that makes me a little bit worried about Houston is they don't hit their free throws. That's especially worrying in a game which could be very close like this one. And the other thing I worry about is just is how they can match up with Arizona's just length on the perimeter, because, you know, the Wildcats just bring so much size on the outside there. They have kind of have matchup problems on every level. And I think that's going to be something that's really going to be tested by Houston, because coming out of a smaller conference, that's something that they maybe haven't had to deal with over the course of the whole season.
So speaking of smaller conference, let's go Jason Logan, St. Peter's taking on Purdue. We got the largest spread of this round, Purdue laying 12.5. And the challenge I have with Purdue is many of us have been looking for the opportunity to fade Purdue. A lot of people thought, all right, maybe they're going to lose before this round, but boom, the path to the Final Four could not be more clear for Purdue. Here you go. Number one, gone. Number two, gone. Here comes St. Peter's. Jason, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, this is going to, it's going to be like Zach Eddy is going to look like Billy Madison out there with like kids hanging off of him and swinging around. This is a big Purdue team, 16th in terms of height, taking on what is a pretty diminutive Peacocks team. And even if the Peacocks get their defense going and force Purdue into bad shots, you still got to keep these guys off the glass. And I don't think that's that early. If I'm Purdue, you got to recognize something. You're coming into enemy territory here. You got a Jersey City team playing in Philadelphia. So that traveled, that whole team's going to travel. And then any UCLA or UNC fans that are kicking around the arena, anyone that's indifferent is going to be cheering for St. Peter. So what you need to do is come out and put this team away early on. You do not give them a chance. You come out and you smash them in the mouth and you take all the wind out of them. Because as we've seen, if you let this team hang around, it's going to come back and bite you in the ass here. You know, Purdue has been pretty good here in first halves, seventh in the country in terms of first half points per game. They allow less than 31 points in the first half as well, too. So I like Purdue to come out here minus seven first half line and just put the boots to the Peacocks. I think they are a dangerous team. If you give them hope, if you give them a window, they're going to snake their way in there. So I like Purdue to come out here and just choke them out early on.
Jason, if someone wanted to be on St. Peter's just because they like to root for Cinderella, would you advise waiting for the live line, knowing that, hey, Purdue should dominate out early?
No, I think with a bigger underdog, you're best to grab that early on. Generally, I like grabbing favorites. So I would say, like, if you're not sold on Purdue and you don't want to play the first half or you don't want to lay the 12.5, wait and see, and see if the Peacocks put up a bit of a fight early on in this game. Maybe the first 5 minutes it's tied, and maybe that gets trimmed down to a 10 or a 9.5 point spread, where you've got, you know, you're four possessions out. Then you can say, okay, well, I got better value with Purdue. For me, I look to bet favorites live. I look to bet bigger underdogs pregame.
Rohit, keeping it in the East, we got a blue blood matchup, UCLA laying two, taking on North Carolina. And I think the biggest challenge everybody has with North Carolina is they're coming in so hot, beating Duke, beating Baylor. But I know we're going to have some recency bias. We all also saw them blow a 25-point lead to where I was sitting there with a North Carolina plus five ticket, and at one point, I was like, well, I don't want to lose this. But then they were playing so bad, I was like, I actually might want them to lose, because what I am seeing is so disgusting that they don't deserve to go on. But now they're taking on UCLA. This matchup, it's only a two-point spread.
Yeah, and I think so much of that is because, you know, people are just impressed with some of the things they do. And obviously, Baylor fought back in that one. But Baylor is they were the defending champions. And North Carolina did have a few calls that maybe shouldn't have been called the way they were. Once people get into foul trouble and stuff, things can really change in a heartbeat, and momentum can really change that. And we've seen that affect every team throughout the tournament. So I don't want to hold that against North Carolina too much against a team like Baylor, when we've seen teams like San Diego State collapse against Creighton, et cetera, et cetera. While I'm looking at this game, the one thing that really does worry me a bit is the status of Jaime Hatchez there, and exactly how close to 100% he is, because he's just so valuable to what the Bruins do kind of on both sides of the floor. And, when he's not 100%, I feel like they become very reliant on some of those other guys there, Juzang and some of those other guys, to kind of get the job done. And I do feel that North Carolina has a few more weapons in total. I really like, obviously, what Bacot's doing on the inside, but they've got all those shooters on the outside who are really clicking right now as well. Looking at this on the whole, though, I think I'm siding with the Bruins here. I'm trying not to have trying not to take too much away from that first round against Akron, where UCLA looked just awful. It seems like pretty much every team, there's no team remaining that has looked impressive in every game, except maybe St. Peter's. You're looking at all those blue bloods, all those teams that are expected to be favorites and contend, and they've always all had their stretches where they look really bad at parts. So I'm trying not to hold it against UCLA too much. If Hatchez is good to go, close to 100%, I like them with the spread.
All right, so Jason, as we wrap this up, there's three games that we did not get to. Are there any final thoughts or teams that you like or want to be fading in the remaining slate of what we've got?
Rohit had mentioned no team looking that great in the first few games, the first two games of the tournament. I would disagree. I think Villanova's looked pretty damn good early on here, and they've looked actually fantastic during the entire postseason. I would say it'd be tough to find a defense playing as well as Villanova in the conference tournament and the NCAA tournament, allowing just under 60 points per game right now over their last five, those full postseason games. And it's a tough matchup for them against the Wolverines, but I like the way that Villanova plays defense. They're a gritty defense. They're very, very quick, excellent on weak side help. They do a good job clogging up the paint. I think they're going to crash on Dickinson, force that ball to the outside. And UM, a spotty outside shooting team. When they're hot, they're hot. When they're not, they're not good at all. And Nova's quite active off the ball. They run a lot of cuts. They run a lot of pick and roll, which is something UM's not fantastic at defending. I think, you know, the Wolverines, they can get in the passing lanes and plug things up. You know, the Wildcats aren't over reliant on that to score points. I do like the under 135 in this year, though, too. I think Villanova's, you know, defense, like I said, very, very good. And they are super, super patient on offense and chew up all that shot clock. So the 135 for that Michigan and Villanova, I like the under there.
Also of note in this game, Villanova 7-1 against the spread as a favorite of 6 points or less this season. I certainly have faith in Jay Wright. He has proven it time and time again. And Michigan, to me, is a little shiny. We see Juwan Howard. We see the way that they continue to win. I'm always looking to say, wait a second, what do I believe more in? I believe more in Villanova. Rohit, any final thoughts?
Big break for them too. I mean, you go from playing those two games playing super, super well, and now you've got this cooling off period where they kind of played better than they've looked all season, and Villanova is still Villanova no matter when they're playing.
Exactly. Rohit, any thoughts on the final games?
Yeah, I think one game I kind of glossed over quickly was Iowa State, Miami, and I actually do want to talk about it. You're seeing a lot of line movement there with the total, open at about 136.5, now down to 133. Definitely a tricky one because, you know, we saw Miami play so well against Auburn. But at the same time, you know, Auburn just, you know, Jabari Smith, those guys just did not play well. And then you look at someone like Iowa State and you keep waiting for the shoe to drop because this is such a bad, bad offensive team. But it hasn't seemed to matter because they've been forcing their opponents into making big time mistakes, turning the ball over constantly. And, you know, they did it against LSU in the first round. And I think, you know, a lot of people did sort of expect that. A lot of people, you know, thought the Tigers might collapse, getting, you know, a new coach kind of on the spur of the moment just before the tournament. But being able to force Wisconsin into those sorts of turnovers, that's a big deal because Wisconsin was one of the best teams in the country at limiting turnovers. And all of a sudden you're making them, you know, forcing them into mistakes, getting it into a low scoring game there. But when I'm looking at this game, like Jason said, it's really nice sometimes to chop those numbers down. And I really like the under on Iowa State's team total. They've been winning those games, but they have not looked good on offense. They caught fire from deep in that first round game against LSU. But even catching fire and deep, having a freshman hit 7 of 3-pointers, they still scored less than 60 points. You're getting a team total at about 65, 66 for this game. And I think it's prime for the under because, yeah, Miami is not a good offensive team by any means, but Iowa State is just so terrible offensively that I think their best chance to win this game is by just making things ugly like they've been doing. So I don't expect them to have a big offensive game, even if they do pull off the win here.
Super excited about this round. It'll be interesting to see if Gonzaga, Arizona, and Kansas do all three make it all the way through as the remaining number one seeds. Jason, where can everybody connect with you?
Sure. Well, you can find all my stuff for I am covering the West bracket, but trying to stick my fingers in all the NCAA pies here. That's all at covers.com. You can follow me on Twitter at @coversjlo.
And Rohit, where can everybody connect?
Yeah, at @covers_ro on Twitters. That's @covers_ro. You can have me there for anything college basketball related. UFC's coming up. We might even be doing some Bellator next month. So hit me up for any questions or any inclinations as where you guys are leaning on some of the odds there.
Oscars.
Oh, yeah. And Oscars coming up this Sunday, too.
Don't forget the Oscars, baby.
And I want to hear from you. What is your favorite bet of this week 16 round? You can hit me up on Twitter or Instagram @RobCressy. Also, make sure to tag @covers. And remember, if you want to be a sharp, don't be a square with your bankroll. Be disciplined with your money. The 1, 2, 3, your pen. I get action. So everybody jump with your rope.